welcome to the Gentlemen Ultras podcast with me, Richard Hall, and Emmett Gates is also here, and we are doing something that's not nostalgic for once, because we thought with Italy in a final against England, we could only surely preview this. Emmett, how are you today, and are you excited?
I'm doing good, Richard, doing good. Yeah, I'm looking forward to Sunday. Seeing Italy back in a final is always... it's always a treat, first time since 2012, and England the first time in 4,000 years. So, yeah, definitely looking forward to it. It should be a good final. And I'm looking forward to dissecting how you feel about this final.
Well, we had a little conversation before the pod, and yeah, to answer the question, Emma, I'm not looking forward to this card. This might sound really odd to a lot of people listening out here, but obviously I'm English. I don't have any Italian connections in me, unless the French part of my family fancy throwing up some Italian there. So there's no real definite allegiance. But saying that, you know, so obviously I've got to back England, but my entire life has been devoted to Italy from, you know, the age of eight. So it's really difficult, because when you spend your entire time, you know, like with this website, when you write about Italian football, you're watching, you're going out there, you're learning the language, well, learning the language, you know, all of these things that you don't realise day in, day out, you're living your life in a way. And then you go, and I just don't identify with English football, but yeah, I'm English, so what am I doing? Yeah. I'll tell you, the best example, Emmett, is that you get to pick your wife, but you don't get to pick your family.
Great metaphor. That's a great metaphor. You see, the thing is, right, okay, so I'm like Irish, was born in England, a bit of Argentine in me too.
You were born in England?
You know this.
I did not know this. Hold on a minute, this changes everything. No way, you were born in England. Where did this come out from?
You know this, I told you this before. Yeah, I was born in London. Yeah, I've told you this before. I was born in London. I was born in
Hampshire. No,
you've
not.
I have. You're taking the piss now. You know this. I told you this.
So, why are you not supporting England?
Because of... it's not necessarily the England players, but it's everything that is around England. You know, there's a large contingent of the fans. You know, the football's coming home and all this kind of... you know, as Kasper Schmeichel said before the semi-final, has it ever been home of England? You know, England have never won the Euros. I thought that was a brilliant response to the question.
It was a stupid question and a brilliant answer.
But...
I get what you mean. Sorry, go on.
No, I was just going to say, like, I've kind of treated it, it's not right, you know, obviously it's kind of, you should support the country where you live, where you're born in, but obviously because of the situation that Northern Ireland is, you know, there's Republic of Ireland and there's Northern Ireland, and depends what side of the religious divide you're on and whatnot, but I've always treated international football like club football almost. Like, I could not care less about the two Irelands. Like, you see, if Italy were playing Ireland, I'd still support Italy. I almost treat the Azzurri like it's Juve or whatever. Like, it's just like, right, they're my team, no matter what. And when Italy have played Ireland, they met in Euro 2012, and I was the only person out of all my friends supporting Italy. You know, it makes no sense, because I'm like you, I have no connection to Italy. But I just love Italy, and... like as we talked about off air, the culture and everything that goes around it. So Italy's just always been my team. I can't explain it, but that's just the way it is.
But that's a really good point. And I think we will talk about the final later, but I think this is really important, because I think that the way football is, and the exposure to football for a younger generation now, you know, people who follow the likes of Ronaldo or Messi, you know, automatically go to, you're supporting Real Madrid, Juventus, Barcelona. And then obviously then you want to follow that on with the international level. And it's like when I grew up, the fact that I was, you know, even contemplating talking about Italian football teams like Inter was madness because people were getting grief for supporting teams in London when we lived in the Northwest, you know. So if you weren't supporting Blackpool, Preston, or Liverpool or Manchester United, you were weird.
Yeah.
And I suppose that's changed now. It's acceptable to support anybody in the UK, you know, English teams, and even it's acceptable to support foreign teams. But international football still has that pull. But it's identifying with things, isn't it? In some ways, I feel that's just as important. You know, I mean, I suppose when you take it back, you identified with your country because you were very, you know, Northerners were Northerners, Southerners were Southerners, and, you know, it's like, I don't know. Do you think things have changed, or do you think that international football still holds that pull where you have to support the team?
Yeah, I mean, it makes logical sense. You know, you support the country that you come from. Mm. And I'm no doubt a weird, you know, bizarre anomaly in this situation. Like, I have like four countries to pick from, and I pick one that I have no connection to, really. So I'm just bizarre. But I think, kind of, as you said, lines have become blurred, you know, because people move around a lot and you kind of have an affiliation to a certain country, or it's kind of, maybe it is coming more towards club football, or that's hard really to say. Maybe I'm just, as I said earlier, maybe I'm just a bizarre kid.
It's like, it's really strange because my wife was laughing at me because all I didn't want was this final. You know, it was like, I can't. Like I was saying to you just off air before, the amount of phone calls I've got. I mean, my father-in-law said this to me this week, right? And he is brilliant. But he said to me, he goes, right? He goes, wow, what a week of football this is. He said, you're playing on Tuesday, we're playing on Wednesday. And I went, Martin, I'm still English. It's like, but, you know, it's like, everything you said before, you know, it's my entire history, and like yours, has been plunged into Italian football. But even like me and my wife going to Milan before we met, and then going every year 4 or 5 times, then that's just not even talking about the rest of Italy and all the memories, you know, everything, the food we eat, the coffee, that I don't know, it's weird. And then it's like sitting there on Sunday, I know it's the right thing to do to cheer for England, but it doesn't feel right.
Yeah.
Which is odd.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It's you're torn. I suppose maybe in a way it's either way you win. You know, if Italy win, you're happy, and if England win, you're happy. Either way, you don't really lose in a sense.
Yeah, but then you'd be disappointed if England lost, disappointed if Italy lose. So, it's a funny one, but. I mean, the game itself will. I think it'll be a really good final. I think, especially, you know, I mean. Oh, one more thing. Yeah, the reason I've forgotten this, most important thing. The reason I want England to win this is so that song can eventually stop.
Yeah,
because It's Coming Home is driving me to distraction. I just want Badil and Skinner out of my head, and just it to end. I mean, I'm sure there'll be a new song. I'm sure there'll be bloody Atomic Kitten with Gareth Southgate, whatever it was called, would rise up again. But yeah, once that song ends, that'd be fantastic. Anyway, getting on a little bit. Talking of the game, I mean, at the two semi-finals, who do you think was stronger in the two semis? You know, because Italy obviously it went the distance, didn't it, against Spain?
Yeah, Spain, I thought, played really well. And probably deserved to beat Italy on the night. But I would say, like, out of the two finalists, I think Italy performed better. Like, England laboured against Denmark. Like, it was not a convincing England performance at all. Denmark were the better team in the first half. England pulled it back. You know, obviously to get the goal before half time to equalise. And in the second half then, you know, I think Denmark were just knackered. And England were pushing forward and piling on pressure. But Kasper Schmeichel really didn't have too many saves to make. You know, it wasn't like he made 7 or 8 saves consecutively, or he was put under undue pressure. England were very laboured, you know, and I was surprised that it went the distance, you know, the extra time. Whereas Italy, obviously Italy were playing a better team in Spain. But I think Italy did suffer. That's something Roberto Mancini talked about. But I think at a certain point, Italy made changes. They brought on Andrea Belotti and Matteo Pessina. And they kind of kept Spain at arm's length in extra time for long periods. And then obviously, they weren't really posing much of an attacking threat themselves. But they kind of kept Spain in front of them where they needed them. And they kind of, right, we'll see it out to penalties then.
It's a funny one with Italy-Spain because, like, first 5 minutes, you know, Italy looked like they came out of the blocks. And like you say, I think Spain, once they calmed down, you know, and started with the possession, it was a bit easier for them. But I think that in some respects, especially when Spain were playing higher up the pitch, it sort of suited Italy's game because of the counter-attacks. You know, I actually think if you'd have switched the semi-finals around, I think that Italy could have been quite laboured as well against Denmark, because Denmark's game plan, well, they were a little bit better than I thought they were going to be, actually, because I thought they were just going to camp everyone behind the ball and wait for set pieces. And instead, they did do that a little bit, but they also countered well. So I think it was always going to be difficult for that. My thing here is that, and I suppose the question for you, Emmett, is because England will come out and will want to, you know, run at Italy, and Italy can obviously defend and will want to counter-attack, this game could suit both teams, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think it all depends on how both teams are, because both teams went, you know, went 120 minutes. Obviously, yeah. Italy a bit further with the penalties, but it's how both teams recuperate ahead of Sunday. You know, Italy have that extra day, which will no doubt be beneficial. But yeah, I think Italy will go back. Mancini will revert back to the style of play that we saw Italy play in the first three group stage games against England. I don't think you'll see what happened against Spain happen against England. Because I feel if Italy get Jorginho, Verratti and Barella on the ball, I think England will find it hard to cope with those three. Because those three really are the key to Italy's success. Because that's, you know, it's kind of, as me and you've been back through the Euros, you know, we've always looked at Italy's midfield in those tournaments, you know, Euro 96, Euro 2000, we're kind of thinking, you know, it's, their midfield so-so, great defence, great attack, but their midfield, but now in 2021, their midfield is by far their strongest area of the pitch.
Yeah.
So if those three are on song, I think England will find it difficult to stop Italy.
Yeah, I do too, in some respects. I think, okay, well, if we're looking at the teams itself, I mean, if you were going to pick a player from both sides that you think could make a difference on a day, you know, we'll go there and talk about that. And also one player who you think is probably the weaker one. I'll start with England, I think, and I'll tell you mine. My biggest worry for England is Jordan Pickford. I just think that he's... So he reminds me of Joe Hart when he gets so wound up.
Yeah.
And he's been lucky because he's made some terrible decisions. And I mean, you looked last night about the way the Danish players crowded him at the corner because of the error beforehand. You know, his distribution afterwards poor. If I was Italy, I'd be, especially someone like Chiellini, as soon as there's a corner, you'd be all over him. Because I just feel like, I mean, okay, if it comes to penalties, potentially he's an asset, but he's not saying he's a bad goalkeeper, but it's just the fact of his temperament. I think could really, really cost him.
Yeah, he showed a real lack of composure last night at times, and even some of his kickouts were going into the crowd, you know. And then there was one, I remember specifically at one point he was given a back pass and he sliced it horribly and it ended up going out for a throw into Denmark. So I think, yeah, if you get Big Giorgio and Bonucci up for corners, they could ruffle his feathers, and he could, you know, do something drastic or erratic. But I definitely think. How did you think Emerson did? You know, as a vice Spinazzola.
This is interesting because if you referred that to social media, you know, you'd probably say that everyone was absolutely laying into him. A lot of people were anyway. But I was on the radio yesterday and was talking to guys at Sirius XFM, and they were saying that they thought Emerson had a fantastic game. And I tend to agree with them, and I'll say why, but I can understand why people had a game. Spinazzola this tournament has been fantastic. We know that.
Unbelievable.
Unbelievable. Great range of passing. He's quick, he's intelligent, and he's really stepped up, and that's been so disappointing to lose him. But when Emerson, it's like any player, a left wing back isn't going to have the same ability, you know, all of them. It's just obvious. So when Emerson comes in, he's got different abilities. He plays a different way. I thought he was positive running forward. You know, yes, okay, some of his passing wasn't 100%. And also, sometimes he doesn't know when to give the ball away. He keeps hold of it too long. But that doesn't mean he's not useful. I thought he was very, very dangerous. Could have scored. You know, if he just sharpens up a little bit, I think he's a really big asset. So I can, if you compare him to Spinazzola, don't, because it's Spinazzola's tournament. But again, you know, people who don't watch Italy, a lot of them say, Italy have lost the best player. But I'll ask you this. Were we raving about Spinazzola at the end of the season?
Yeah.
Obviously, we knew he was a good player, but no one was talking him in the same way that people are talking about him now.
Yeah. I think, obviously, as me, ourselves, or, you know, long-term Serie A fans, we had seen enough of Spinazzola. But I think under Mancini's almost given him the freedom that Paulo Fonseca perhaps didn't give him at Roma. I mean, he had really good games for Roma, but I tweeted on the open night of the tournament after Italy beat Turkey. I said, you just hope that his body remains healthy for the next month, because he was fragile and he missed over 20 games. And then obviously what happened against Belgium happened. But as you said, yeah, like nobody was saying, oh, he's an extra Roberto Carlos at the end of the season. But I think him and Insigne struck up this really good partnership on the left for Italy. And obviously he's been coached well by Mancini, and, you know, when to go, when not to go, when to press. And obviously him and Insigne have been doing really good 1-2s, and Roma really haven't had a player like Insigne on that side, on Spinazzola's side at club level. So yeah, I mean, I thought Emerson did really well. You know, considering he's going in, he's hardly, you know, played in the tournament. And then he gets thrown in the deep end of the semi-final against Spain. I thought he handled himself pretty well, considering the circumstances.
No, definitely, he did. It's quite an interesting one. I think, like we say, you know, I think in the final as well, as a replacement, he's done. He'll be absolutely fine. So who is you? Was that your weak pick for Italy then?
My weak pick probably would be Ciro Immobile. I think he's been absolutely dreadful this tournament. He's awful, 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 awful. I can't remember what game it was. I think it might have been the Austria game. And I put up on Twitter, I put out a tweet and I said, imagine if you had this Italy side with the 1998 Bobo Vieri, how good Italy would be. And I got, like, you know, a lot of likes and retweets, because it's true. Just the one thing missing out of this team is a world-class striker. Because Immobile has never convinced me at international level. I mean, Immobile's one of those strikers that's really good at club level, but just doesn't translate it to international level. Like, Beppe Signori was like that in the 90s for Italy. Pippo Inzaghi was kind of like that to an extent with Italy. Enrico Chiesa was the same. Really good at club level, but they just don't fit, or the leap in quality, well, maybe it's probably the leap in quality is not an issue anymore because club level is probably overtaken. But Immobile just does not look like the same player for Italy as he does for Lazio. Obviously, it's a different setup and different system. But I think Immobile is the weak link in this team.
I'm going to agree with you, actually. I think that... What's he, three goals now, is it?
Two in the tournament, two.
Just two.
Or one.
One.
Opening night.
No.
Opening night against Turkey. I don't think he scored since.
Are you sure?
I'm nearly sure.
Yeah,
he's got two assists, I know that much. And I think he only has the solitary goal.
Either way, he's been absolutely...
Yeah, and I mean, against Belgium, he was terrible because Belgium's defence were just bouncing him around. You know, he lacked the physicality. I said to you, and you agreed, that game was perfect for Belotti because he's got the physicality to hold up the ball and wait for Insigne or Berardi or Chiesa to come running towards him, or he can lay it off. Immobile's better when he's spacing behind.
When
defences press high and he's got space channels to run into or whatever. But he hasn't really got that for most of the tournament. And if he's playing him as back to goal, that's tailor-made for Belotti.
Yeah, absolutely. His 2 goals, 1 assist, actually. Just looked it up.
Okay.
It up, but there we go. Anyway.
Well, what do you think? Do you think Immobile would be Italy's weak area?
I think so, yeah. It's difficult because, like you said, with Belotti, it made sense in that game. Against England, I can't really make my mind up because, you know, I think that Italy will have to... Well, I don't know. Italy's midfield should really stand up to England's. For me, it depends on how the game's going to pan out. You know, if it's, I think I'd probably start with Immobile and just see how the game goes. Because if England, you know, are up for it at the start and Italy are playing that counter-attacking game, then it's, you know, it's absolutely tailor-made for Immobile. But like you say, if they're getting a lot, you know, you get to 60, well, whatever, half-time, and you're thinking, you know, we've got England against the wall here, someone like Belotti would be perfect to bring in then. But,
yeah,
I don't know. I'd be interested to see what Mancini will do with it.
Yeah.
Because I can't... He has that ability to change things up. Because one good thing about this Italy side is, you know, you take out someone like Verratti, you can put Locatelli in. You know, there's no immediate weak points in that sense. I do think, well, apart from maybe up front. So, but again, you know, it's... There's talk in the paper, in the Italian media, that you could even play Lorenzo Insigne as a false nine. But I think he'll have another chance to sort of leave his mark on the tournament, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, like, you think of Immobile up against Harry Maguire and John Stones. Like, Harry Maguire's pretty... He's a physical centre-back.
Yeah.
And if England don't leave a lot of space in behind, you kind of think, well, what's Immobile going to contribute? You know, otherwise, you know, like even for example, against it was the Austria game and the Belgium game, like he couldn't control the ball. Like the ball was just bouncing off him. Insigne would pass it into his feet, he wouldn't get it back. The ball would like bounce off his shin, fly every other direction other than where it's supposed to go. You know, so you kind of think what can Immobile contribute? I'd say probably Mancini will go with him just because he started him throughout the tournament. But I would say, if it's not going Italy's way, bring on Belotti as soon as possible. Or, as you said, maybe try and something really, you know, experimental and use Insigne as a false nine.
Be crazy to do that in the final, wouldn't it?
Yeah, imagine doing that. I mean, that's what Spain did in the 20... No, they did that in the group stage. Sorry. I was thinking that was the final, but it was the group stage. It started Cesc Fabregas as a false nine.
You remember that? It's like revolutionary, isn't it? Well, not revolutionary, but because obviously our friend Luciano Spalletti started all.
Yeah, with Tari and Roma.
Yeah. So we've got the weak points, both teams. What are you picking for England's most dangerous threat for Italy?
I would say the pace of Raheem Sterling. I think Sterling has been excellent for England in this tournament, and you imagine if it end up in a situation, a one-on-one situation, where you have Sterling against Chiellini or Bonucci.
Well, like, he's just going to kick him, isn't he?
Yeah. Like, Chiellini couldn't catch him on a Vespa, you know what I mean? Like, Sterling, his pace is electric. But I'm looking forward to Chiellini and Harry Kane battle. That'll be good.
I think that's going to be fantastic. It's that's going to be really good. I think Chiellini, with all that intelligence, Kane's going to really have his work cut out.
Yeah, because I mean, England really haven't come up against, you know, this was thrown at Italy by Patrick Vieira and Gary Neville and Roy Keane, that Italy hadn't come up against an opponent of equal status. And then obviously they beat Belgium and they beat Spain, but who have England beat on this run? But I mean, this is the worst Germany team in 20 years. You know,
I don't know. I would say, because you've got Croatia aren't in massive amounts of fun, but Croatia and Germany are decent teams still.
Yeah, but I mean, you're not talking the Croatia of 2018, and you're not talking the Germany of 2014. You know, you're talking about sides on the decline. I know, obviously, Italy beat Belgium, and Belgium maybe are slightly overrated, or, you know, obviously that Eden Hazard out injured, and De Bruyne was kind of half fit and had to take painkillers to play, and then Spain aren't really the Spain of 2012. But Italy have played more superior teams than England have, so it's like, Harry Kane really hasn't come up against really good defenders up until this stage. So you kind of think, how will he do? And obviously he's against still one of the best in the world in Chiellini. And Chiellini's going to relish that. You just know that he is going to relish that battle, and he is going to try every trick in the book to keep Harry Kane quiet.
I'd say one player I'm very fond of for England is Jack Grealish.
Jack, Maradona, Messi, Pele, all rolled into one. If you listen to people, like Jack, don't get me wrong, Jack Grealish,
really good player.
But you would nearly think that he was the second coming of Diego, the way the England fans bring on Grealish, and all the pundits are saying, oh, you need to start Grealish. It's like, he's a good player, but I mean, he's not even a Gazza's level, never mind. No. At a level of, you know, you would nearly think that he was like the second coming of Diego or Messi or at that level, because the build around him, the hype, and it's true, no fault of his own. You know, I mean, he can't control it, but yeah. It's just like, come on. If he was really that good, he'd be starting.
I think he's just one of those players that's different. I think that.
Yeah, I think people like him because he seems like a normal Jack the Lad, you know, that doesn't take himself super seriously. He's almost like the opposite of Cristiano Ronaldo.
Yeah. So I think that the reason a lot of England fans like him as well is because a lot of England have had the same player type of player, this sort of England Academy player 2.0.
Yeah.
Which is like some either wing-back stroke winger, rapid as hell, runs at players, doesn't really do too much, and the end product is quite dire.
Yeah, like Kyle Walker, literally like a conveyor belt of Kyle Walkers.
Yeah, pretty much, you know. And so then more offensive ones, we've got players like Rashford, and you know, you just sort of, and he just seems so similar. But I think with this, it's just, I think England fans just want someone who's creative, who's going to make him, you know. It's like, for me, I'm not comparing ability, but you know when you watch Lorenzo Insigne play?
Yeah.
When I watch Lorenzo Insigne and I watch Jack Grealish, they both make me smile.
Yeah.
And Rodrigo De Paul, you know, when you watch him, well, we won't watch him next season in Serie A, but yeah. You know, a player like that, they're not great. Alvaro Recoba, I'm not saying anyone's as good as him, but you know, it's just that sort of...
Yeah, it's that languid, like...
Yeah.
A kind of, like, socks, shirt untucked... Socks down to the ankles, Rui Costa style of, like, you know, like real lucid, languid, just like the complete opposite of Cristiano Ronaldo, you know, real physical 100%. Specimen, like he was designed in a science lab. Like, they're the opposite end of the spectrum. Just like three lads that stuck on a pair of football boots and went out to play, essentially.
Exactly. Excuse me. So, yeah, but the thing is as well, he does have end product. So, you know, off the bench, I think that he's always, you know, dangerous.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm not discrediting Jack Grealish. I'm not saying he's a bad player. No. He's a very good player. But just the hype that surrounds him, which, is, again, is no fault of his own, but you would think that England have, you know, Maradona sitting on the bench ready to come off the hurt Italy or hurt teams, you know, when Gareth Southgate gives him the nod. It's like, no. Like, and that does him no favours either. Because you're just piling on pressure and hype that he doesn't need and doesn't ask for. So, but yeah, I mean, I think a lot of it will depend on how mentally, physically drained England are after last night. Because I expected them to win, but I thought it would have happened in 90 minutes. So the fact that they had to play that extra 30, you know... And Italy have had an extra day recuperation time. You know, will that make the difference? And
could do, couldn't it?
Yeah, and I mean, if it goes to penalties, I expect Chiellini to like pick up Jordan Henderson and like bear hug him and slap him and punch him. That was my highlight of the tournament. That was fantastic.
Superb, wasn't it? Absolutely brilliant. That. I mean, he just owned Darby, didn't he? He just basically said, They just, oh, just fantastic. I mean, what he must have thought when Chiellini had done that and walked away.
Jordi Alba was like, why are you touching me? Like, you're invading my personal space. He probably was thinking, there's COVID restrictions here, and you're giving me a bear hug in the middle of it. We're trying to decide which end of the goal to shoot him.
The only thing Chiellini could have done better was pull his shorts down and walk off. on Italy, when you talk about the most dangerous player for Italy, are you going for Ballon d'Or winning Jorginho? Which, can I just say, what, really? Do you really, are you in that camp?
I put it this way, if Andrea Pirlo never won one, I don't think Jorginho should, with all due respect to Jorginho. I mean, but don't get me wrong, he is the linchpin of this side. But I think this Italy side, the strength is the collective. Maybe, honestly, I would probably give it to Federico Chiesa before I give it to Jorginho, truth be told.
The thing is, Neil Barnett, who was on the radio with you the day, used to play for Chelsea, and he asked me the question. You know, obviously he can see it in Jorginho, and we were talking about how he played in Italy previously, but he says watching him week in and week out at Chelsea, he can't see why. Now, I don't watch enough Chelsea, so...
Yeah, me neither, I can't comment either.
But yeah.
But I mean, for Italy, obviously, he was very good in the Champions League final, Jorginho, and he's integral, you know, to Mancini's setup and the way, you know, he's instant starter. And don't get me wrong, he would maybe be on the shortlist or on the podium, but I don't know if you would get... Although, in saying that, you kind of look around the landscape and you kind of think, well, who should win it this year? You know, if it's not Jorginho to win the Ballon d'Or, who would win it? You know, Lewandowski maybe? You know, Ronaldo, Messi... Neither of them really won anything. I know it's an individual award.
Romelu Lukaku.
Lukaku, yeah, I mean, for what he did at Inter, and obviously he had a decent tournament with Belgium.
It's difficult, isn't it?
It could be the case of, well, Jorginho is kind of, he has exceeded expectations, and many of the main players really haven't had outstanding years, so yeah, we'll give it to Jorginho. But again, I suppose it would all depend on how the final goes. But in saying that, Jorginho's winning penalty against Spain, I mean, that ball trickled into the net. I mean, he could not have hit that ball any slower.
You've seen the graphic where he's in mid-air, well, as he's at the highest point of the jump, the keeper's already gone.
Yeah.
And you see it from the other side in slow motion, and his eyes, you can just see him go, right, okay, I know what I'm doing. So, sorry, did you say that Chiesa was your main threat for it against England?
Yeah, I would put Federico Chiesa. I mean, obviously you've watched enough of Juve to see how he's developed this season, and just that when he gets one-on-one with players and he shifts either inside or goes outside, he is absolutely electric. You know, he's probably Italy's equivalent to Sterling in that rapid pace, the burst of acceleration, the low centre of gravity, and he's come up with so many clutch moments, you know, this year. You know, he was Juve's best player in those two Champions League games against Porto, and he was Juve's best player for the last 6 months of the season. And he's carried that form on into the Euros, and he you know, displaced Domenico Berardi after, what, three games? You know, he was in, and Berardi's never really had much of a chance since. So, to me, it's all... Chiesa is Italy's main threat.
I definitely think he is. One player I just want to say that I think he's superb. And just, I don't think he, because of his agent, he doesn't get the credit he sometimes deserves. But when you look at Donnarumma, I was writing an article about him the other day. And so, do you remember a goalkeeper called Paolo Orlandini, sat on the bench at Inter, played four times and won a load of trophies?
The name rings a bell.
Yeah, well, that's it. He played from like 1988 to 2012 or something over there. And he got 235 appearances in that time. Donnarumma has already got 215 appearances for Milan and 32 international caps. And he's 22. It's just ridiculous. And the quality, I just think he's... So, because everyone looks at him and, you know, because of the situation before the Hellas Verona game with the ultras, which they had that... Which was amusing, Dybala, when it said, you know... take you, you can you can, we made the decision you can leave and take that parasite of a brother with you as well.
What's he called, Antonio Donnarumma? Per Antonio.
Yeah, yeah, no, he's done nothing wrong.
Yeah, and he's getting dogs abuse.
And you know, because he's the last contract and Raiola trying to move him, and now he's gone to Paris Saint Germain. You can't blame the guy if he wants to go to Paris Saint Germain. He wants to earn more money. So what? You know, he's not from Milan. He's from Naples, for God's sake. Well, south of Naples. So, and he gets all this abuse, and he gets whistled before the Wales game, at the end of Wales game, by a minority, admittedly, of Italy fans. But the way to see the emotion on his face and just to see how good he is, I think it's just I can't. I know it's weird saying Donnarumma's underrated, but I just really think he doesn't get sort of the respect he deserves because, irrelevant of what he wants to do, which club he wants to play for, I think he's possibly the next. If you're talking about a goalkeeper who could win the Ballon d'Or,
yeah,
I'd put him in.
Yeah, I think the problem Donnarumma has is that his image has been sullied by everything that's going on. You know, his departure from Milan, signing for PSG, and having Mino Raiola as an agent is kind of overshadowing just how good of a goalkeeper he is. So, but I mean, you kind of need, you know, Milan fans need to kind of get over it at this point. You know, he performed admirably for what, 4 or 5 years, and he's not going to another rival in Serie A. It's sad to see him leave the league, to be honest. Same about Hakimi, you know.
I think so, yeah.
The football's going through a global crisis, but not a PSG who's throwing money around them like there's, it's going out of fashion. But that's another issue for another day. But I mean, yeah, just as you said, you can easily see Donnarumma for the next 15 years, and he could end up breaking Gigi Buffon's record for Italy. You know, what did Buffon end up on? 168 caps or something around that. Although in saying that, I wouldn't rule out Buffon playing in the next 10 years either. The way he's going.
When he comes back from Parma after having the most blinding season ever.
Like, it would not surprise you if Buffon ended up going to the World Cup in Qatar. Would not surprise me in the slightest. Not as a starter, but just to be in and around the squad. Would not surprise me in the slightest.
176, so yeah, you're close.
Yeah, so I mean, it wouldn't surprise you if Donnarumma eventually matched that record or surpassed it.
He's certainly on track for it. So, Italy's lineup. Well, the starting lineup against Spain. So we'll go from the same. It was Donnarumma, obviously, in goal. Di Lorenzo, Bonucci, Chiellini, Emerson, Barella, Giorgino, Verratti, Chiesa, Immobile, Insigne. Are you seeing any changes in that?
No, I would keep it as is. As much as it pains me to keep Immobile in there, I would keep it as is. And obviously, then you've Locatelli, Berardi, Bellotti, Pessina, you could bring on if the game needs changing or if it goes in extra time. But yeah, I would safely say Mancini will likely keep that same 11. What do you think?
And with the only question I have is, Alessandro Florenzi is now fit.
I think I would keep Di Lorenzo, to be honest. I think it'd be risky, I think, to bring in Florenzi, who's pretty much missed the entire tournament. You know, only Franco Baresi did that at USA 94, but that's because he's Baresi. And Florenzi, with all due respect, isn't Franco Baresi. You know, obviously Baresi, he got injured in the first game and missed the next 3 weeks and came back to the final and marked Romario out of the game in 6,000 degree heat in Pasadena. I think it'd be risky for Mancini to bring Florenzi back in at right back, having missed, he played against Turkey and then has missed every single minute since. I don't know, I think Di Lorenzo has got the consistency of playing throughout the tournament, so keep him in, I think. And plus, Di Lorenzo is quicker.
Yeah, absolutely.
Di Lorenzo is quicker than Florenzi, and Italy are going to need a lot of pace against Sterling. And if maybe Sancho starts or Saka.
Well, that was going to be my next question. I think you've read my mind there, because England's semi-final against Denmark was Pickford in goal, Walker, Stones, Maguire and Shaw, and then it had Phillips, Rice, Saka, Mount, Sterling and Kane. I'm with you there. I think that it's Saka's the one. I mean, Saka's an absolutely superb player. but I don't know. It's difficult. I mean, Saka has started more games than
Jadon Sancho.
Not Sancho. I don't know where that went. So I'm probably going to predict that he starts with Saka.
Yeah, because I mean, Sancho only played against Czech Republic, I'm thinking.
Yeah.
Who did England play in the quarterfinal?
Was it... Oh, England. Oh, they played against Ukraine 1-4-0.
Ukraine,
and Sancho
yeah.
started.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I expect Sacco to... Or Sacco. Saka to start. But
yeah, I think so.
And I mean the pace that those two carry, you know, I think you need Di Lorenzo in there, definitely.
Yeah, I think so. I think he's it would be risky to start Florenzi, even though I prefer him. I mean, he's not Di Lorenzo. He's not had a bad tournament, has he? I mean,
yeah, no, I mean he hasn't been brilliant, but he hasn't been poor either. You know, he hasn't really been a passenger in any game. He's just been solid, but not flashy. Just, you know, diligently carrying out his duties almost. But I mean, you're not gonna remember him in any game saying, "Oh, Di Lorenzo was unbelievable." The way Spinazzola has stood out, Di Lorenzo has been the opposite of Spinazzola. He's just been there on the right flank, more defensive minded, solid, nothing flashy. So yeah, I would definitely keep Di Lorenzo at the expense of Florenzi, definitely. You'd imagine Southgate will retain the same starting 11.
Yeah, I think it'd be a match. Where do you think it's going to be won this game? I mean, do you think it's going to be in midfield? Or do you think it will be more in these? You know, with the likes of Chiesa and Insigne and the likes of Saka and Sterling. Do you think that's the key points there?
Well, I think Italy will try to win it in midfield because that's their strongest, you know, that's their biggest strength. Verratti, Barella, Jorginho will want to get on the ball and dictate. England, I think, will try to win the game on the wings through Sterling and Saka. So I think if Italy's midfield three get control of the game, I think England will struggle, to be honest. If we see Verratti, Jorginho and Barella like we did earlier in the tournament, you know, maybe against Austria or like the war against Belgium, if we see that, I think England will struggle to get a foothold in the game because England really don't have players that can do what Italy's midfielders can do. In my opinion, anyway, I don't think either they possess that trio That trio work really well together. You know, they're fluid, they're in sync. It's Italy's greatest area, and I don't think England have that, so that's where I think the match could be won and lost.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. The atmosphere, I mean, it's going to be... Do you think it's going to be like a home game, or...
Well, I mean,
it's going to have any effect?
As you saw yourself in the Italy-Spain game, there's a lot of Italian expats living in London.
Mm.
So, I mean... You could easily fill Wembley up with as many Italians as you could English. You know, you couldn't maybe fill Wembley, but I mean, Italy will have a sizable presence at the final. I think in terms of fan support, it definitely won't be like 80% England and 20% Italy. It maybe more 60-40 or 70-30, I think, maybe in England's favour. But definitely won't feel like a home game, I don't believe.
No, I completely agree. I think there'll be... Obviously, there's going to be more English there, but I think the Italians who are there have certainly know how to make some noise. And I think we already know who's won the anthems.
Because
one thing that worries me more than anything is... It's just... since I can remember watching England, I like the anthem. It's not about the anthem. It's just, why can you not get it in time? what is it about? Why? Every other country manages it. Every other country manages it. And then England, it's like, you start the other game against Denmark. I actually said to my friend, no. He said, what? I said, I think they've done it. No, they've messed it up. It's just like infuriating, absolutely infuriating.
I think the Italian national anthem should just be played at every game, in every competition, in every tournament. Even if Italy's not there, the Italian national anthem should be played.
Just rolling out Chiellini and Buffon to just whack just smash it out.
Even at the Olympics in, like, I don't know, 2028. Yeah, just wheel them out. Even if it's like for the shot put or the javelin or something, just bring them out. It's just, just a brilliant national anthem.
Yeah, it is. It's fantastic.
So, what's your predictions?
Right, now, that's what I was just about to ask you, because we are winding up now. Good God. I want it as painless as possible. Personally, I think if it was like, if any team drubs the other one, I think I'd be quite disappointed. So, I'm going to go 2-1.
You're not saying to who, you're just saying 2-1.
Can I tell you why? If you're actually looking at quality of teams, I'm looking at it from a football perspective, I think that Italy would win 2-1. I think that, you know, I can see England scoring, but I do think Italy just a little bit stronger. But in my head as well, seeing like the whole of this country is just going to go, but it's going to build and build and build, and it's going to go mental. And I don't know if that's going to have some effect. Now, saying that, this is the longest answer ever. So saying that, I'm going to stick with England. Sorry, Italy. I'm going to stick with Italy 2-1, because I've just thought, do you know what? The atmosphere is massive here, but you think about Italy at the moment, and we've seen the scenes over there. The build-up of, you know, coming from that headline after the 2018 World Cup failure, apocalypse in Gazzetta, the build's been from there with Italy. So both countries, the build-up, this means so much to both. It could easily either motivate or overwhelm any of the countries. So there's not one or the other, really. So I think I've just gone the technical quality on the pitch, and I think Italy just going to edge it 2-1.
Yeah, that is exactly the same scoreline that I had in my head when I asked you that question. Italy to win 2-1, I think. I could see maybe Chiesa scoring again, and maybe I'd love to see an Insigne curler, you know, vintage Insigne cutting in, bending it into the top corner. But I don't know if it'll happen. I mean, he did it against Belgium, but it was more central and not really cutting in from the left as such. But yeah, I think I fancy Italy 2-1.
And I want Jack Grealish to come off the bench and score a 30-yard red kick. Just
I think the football's coming Rome, and it's not coming home. Just put it that way.
Yeah.
But I mean, I'm hoping it's a good final. That's kind of what I want. I want a good, because I'm trying to think of the recent Euro finals. Like 2016 was a drab final. Portugal and France wasn't really good. Italy were absolutely annihilated by Spain in the 2012 final. 2008, Germany Spain was a cagey affair. The 2004 final, the less said about that, the better. You're talking maybe Euro 2000 final, Italy France, maybe for
that was a good one
because Italy had scored and then they kind of retreated, and then it was like, could France break them down? And we all know how that finished. But yeah, I'm just hoping for a good final. And I think I'm with you, Italy 2-1.
Well, we shall see.
Before we finish, do you think Mancini will bring Baggio on? Will he play?
He's got to play.
He has to play. Throw him on for 5 minutes at the very end, just to wind the game down.
Do you know what I'd love? Just to wind the England players up as well. Just to say, it's for Vialli to come out in full kit. Just start warming up and be like, okay.
I tell you what,
job than a Mowgli.
Yeah, I was going to say, I literally was just about to say that. I would actually maybe take Vialli over Giro Mowgli.
Yeah, I'm Mancini. It's not the turban. Yeah. But Mancini could still do 90 minutes, you know. Looks in quality shape.
Oh, I mean, you talk about a stylish man. Oh, Madonna mia.
That is just different.
And you see when he gives interviews and he's got the blazer flung over his like left shoulder or right shoulder and he's like hooking it in with his finger. So he just looks impeccable.
He certainly does. He certainly does. I'm sure they're all going to look impeccable for that final. Right then, so without further ado, I should say, from the two Englishmen, it's ciao for now.